Welcome to Show Me Yours with Jackie and Johnny, everybody.
I'm Jackie.
My name is Johnny. This is the show where friends are sharing music with each other. It's sort of a music podcast. We'll see how far we get into it.
The intention is for it to be a music podcast.
Hey, it's going to be a lot of things, all right? There's a lot of people's girlfriends in there. Today, we're starting the first of many iterations of this podcast. I think we've tried to do a few different ones. Hopefully, this is the one that works.
Yeah.
I think... not going so in-depth into a track-by-track thing because we don't need a podcast with homework. And let's get serious. Some of those episodes were fucking snoozers.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. No, she doesn't. Oh, and my computer just died on me. So we're going to freestyle it right live. Okay. We're already having technical difficulties.
This is good.
No, it's awesome.
You improvise.
Yeah. Well, this week on Show Me Yours is my opportunity. I have the luxury and the opportunity to share my record with Jackie this weekend. As you can see here, ladies and gentlemen, we are doing Operation Ivy's Energy. I think it's very exciting. It's very exciting for me because this is one of my favorite albums of all time. It's going to be interesting for any listener out there that's never heard of Operation Ivy, because if you're going to get into like ska core at 30 years old, then you got other issues in your life. But I still highly recommend and highly implore anybody out there that's going to listen to this to check this album out if you haven't already. It's
if you do want homework,
if you do want the homework, you can do it. You can do it, or you can just listen to us bullshit.
But it will enhance the experience.
Mm-hmm. Or you're more than welcome to just sit there and listen to us bullshit back and forth. Either way, is going to be a delightful experience for you, I promise. But Operation Ivy is a band from the Bay Area in California that came around in 1987. See, I could do this thing totally off fucking book. I don't need any notes from the internet to tell you about this album, because it is. It really is in here. I think I heard this album for the first time when I was probably 12 years old. Right around that time, I think I went to the Warped Tour for my first big festival kind of experience with multiple bands and things like that. So at 12 years old, watching Rancid was actually on the bill. I think you can go back and Google and confirm those dates through 2002, 2003. But Rancid, Dropkick Murphys, Less Than Jake, and all these Suicide Machines and all these other bands. So like hip hop, punk rock was like so well, defined under this like massive umbrella of, there's like Celtic stuff over here for, your Dropkick Murphys guys, and there's like hardcore stuff over here, and then even different umbrellas of that, right? Mm-hmm. With ska, it can really be hit or miss. I mean, mostly hit for me. I am a big ska fan. Fucking love this style of music. If you're going to go on the internet or talk to any music historian, then you're going to see that Operation Ivy really started like this third wave of ska. From the beginning, I mean, it's coming out of, like Jamaican kind of dance hall roots and stuff like that. Going forward and through like the 60s and 70s, kind of getting like Americanized and coming to England and stuff and blowing up, right? But when Operation Ivy came out of the Bay Area with this record that, if it was any other band that sounded, this shit, it wouldn't work. Right? Whoever. It really does. It's poor record quality of recording. It is fucking raw.
Yeah.
I think that's what you can say, right? Yeah, like, it doesn't sound like shit. But I'm not going to lie to you. When I heard it for the first time when I'm like 12 years old, you'd have to go back to like 88. This comes out 2 years before I'm even born.
Right.
Right. But everybody in my community is like, there's something about this record that's, that's definitely different, right? It's genre defying. Every band that I like that has like some, horns or some upstroke in it or whatever, right? Really cites this band as being the one. So I remember kind of getting into it and going like, well, this is interesting. I'm just a kid, right? Like, so my ears aren't necessarily there. And it went from kind of being completely ignorant to, listening to bands like Less Than Jake and things like that that were so polished at the time and so much fun. Because you're still I'm a kid, right? I'm 12 years old. I just kind of want to dance and, yell at my principal and tell my mom that she's stupid or something, right? But, so when you get this, now, like, holy shit, these guys are singing songs about the world, right? And then... shit, damn near 20 years later, I'm still listening to, the album, and good to bring you a deceptively simple and incredibly profound record. That's all I'm going to wax poetic on it for now. Jackie, what do you think about this album?
I liked it a lot. I thought it was fun. I mean, I don't know a lot about ska, so I probably couldn't differentiate between different ska bands.
Between like a wave and things like that, you're going to be like, I'm more of a second wave kind of girl,
Yeah, or just is between different two different ska bands.
Oh my god. even after listening to this, this is not the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones. Like, I'll fucking tell you that.
Obviously I can tell a difference between I don't know, like, I don't know a lot about ska and like the whole culture surrounding it, but I do think it's fun. I've never disliked it.
Is it weird when you see somebody that, like, I mean, Sublime is probably like a quintessential ska band, right? or they definitely have some elements there, but like, that's the easiest band for anybody to hate on,
right?
In whatever way, like, I for some reason Sublime. when you're in high school and you're smoking weed, we're from British Columbia.
Yeah, exactly.
So like,
yeah.
let's get the record straight here. We're pro Sublime. Yeah, on Show Be Yours. But they're just one of those bands that I find, you know, like a music snobber, they're quick to shit on. Right. And for whatever reason, Operation Ivy is definitely like exempt from that. I think we take that. What was I saying last night? I was saying that I think it's like an underrated album in like the sense of like the rest of the world, but so overstated in the community of punk rock. Like, we fucking get it. It's a good record. Yeah. So that's why I decided to do the first episode on it.
Yeah. I enjoyed it though. I thought it was fun. I thought there was a lot of variety in it. Obviously a lot of very, short songs. It was funny when I looked at the track listing, I was like, all right, I'm gonna be here for a while.
Yeah, 27 like songs on the on the actual album. Now, let's get this straight. If anybody's gonna go and pick this record up, this version that you see here is Energy. It's the original, I think, 16 songs or something like that that they've just put out as a full length. The one that you're gonna find now, I think most places, is a compilation. Basically it's all black and it just has the guy coming through, and you get like, that's the one to find. Anybody that's gonna buy this album is get the longer version. It's the discography. So
that's
it's the
one that's on Spotify.
Is it? Yeah. Okay. It's so it basically has Energy and a 7-inch that they did, and then I think a few other demos and stuff at the end. And I love listening to this record. It's fantastic. It's great when it's quick, but if you're going to fucking go for it, you go all the way. The band was only around for fucking 3 years. Do yourself a favor and get all the songs. Yeah.
An extra 10 songs won't kill you.
Yeah, and even when you add the 10 songs, it only gets the album to 50 minutes. Yeah, like, it's fucking not. This isn't going to take a lot of time out of your day.
Yeah.
Right? But I think it's going to enrich your life immensely. As it has mine. It's one of those albums, like, from start, like, if you put the needle on the record of this album and go from Knowledge right into Sound System, like, and you're going to tell me that we're not going to at least see this through,
right?
Then you don't like music and you're kind of an asshole. Like, I feel like, if you can't implore me,
kill yourself.
Well, I mean, let's not go that far. I don't know. But if you're asking for music recommendations and this one, doesn't, you know, really like, soothe the taste buds or something like that, then I would be, you know, I'd be remiss to hang out with you again. So no pressure, but
I wish ill upon you and your family.
Yeah, I won't stand for this kind of aggression with them. What might be well, definitely like the building blocks to like culture and music and stuff like that, as I know, because not only is it a great album front to back, it's like the ethos and the I don't know, I guess you'd call it like the spirit behind it is something that I still like, that's carried through to where we're sitting at now, is, you know, go low budget, make it yourself, fuck everything else, and do your best to, you know, try to tell the truth or be as true to yourself as possible. And the, not the best track on this album by any means, but, you know, the one that kind of like really brings the whole thing together is Unity. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Is that kind of, the through line to this whole thing is, you know, very young, actually, and pretty bright kids as far as like songwriting and you know, and lyrics and stuff are concerned.
Do you know how old they were?
I'm gonna take a shot in the dark. I mean, well, we have the computer right here. I mean, it did shut down on me.
Say, I thought we didn't.
Well, okay. Well, we can open it up, but I'm not exactly sure. But I mean, if I would venture to say, these kids are like maybe 20 years old at the time, okay. Right? You know, maybe even younger. And actually, I didn't mention the members of the band. Actually, from lead vocals, you have Jesse Michaels, who, I mean, speaks for himself on this record. He only did a few other albums, you know what I mean? So very like, you know, low output as far as music is concerned in this industry. But Jesus Christ, everything he did was so goddamn good. There's some vocal performances on this record that you're not really expecting. You right. know what I mean? From is it drink in the Badlands? You know what I mean? and then he's fucking really screaming there too, right? Yeah, like when he goes, when he really goes into this thing, like it's one of the best vocal performances that I think still stands out. And I think the reason that the record is so raw, just speaks to that even more. You know right. what I mean? Right. There's something visceral about this goddamn thing. And I think Jesse Michaels with his songwriting and, you know, vocal performance on this thing, like I can't speak highly enough about that man. So let's mm-hmm. put an end on that. On guitar, you have Lint. He was calling himself At That Time.
Yeah.
Anybody who knows punk rock knows that that is actually Tim Armstrong from the band Rancid. Again, you can't have anybody that's just not like kind of built to strum that ska. I think they were calling him like Ska King or something crazy like that at the time. Like he was mm-hmm. just like that, you know, driving force in what was basically a three-piece band, right? Where you have on bass, Matt Freeman, who's also from Rancid fame, who, if you know, I mean, we hung out last night and you saw a lot of, I played you a lot of videos, so
yeah.
you know, yeah. you know that Matt Freeman is one of the baddest motherfuckers alive with a bass guitar in his hands, right?
Yeah.
And then I believe David Mello on drums, who I believe still actually
Mello?
Plays in bands. I think
last
that
last name Mello.
Last name Mello. I mean, like I'm just going off script here because this fucking thing is broken. But I had all my notes, and now we're going to shit. But you know what I mean? Just that four piece together for maybe, you know, a little over 2 years, and that goddamn impact that yeah. you know was left and you know sent shockwaves to a kid
yeah.
in his apartment telling his friend about.
I can't imagine having. Like anything worthwhile to say at 20 years old. Like when you see artists like mm-hmm. that put out really meaningful work and have like a lot of like clarity to their yeah. thoughts and stuff.
It's incredible. Like, I mean, Tupac and Biggie, we were watching. Yeah, congratulations yeah, to the yeah. Notorious B.I.G. just got into the Rock and Roll yeah. Hall of Fame today.
Yeah.
Along with Nine Inch Nails.
Congratulations to Depeche Mode.
Fuck off, Depeche Mode. I got nothing against you as a band. I'm just not trying to hear that shit. That being said, any future guest of the show that wants to come on, bring Depeche Mode. Yeah, we don't say no to records on the show. Yeah.
We'll go into the Depeche Mode.
Yeah, we'll go into Depeche Mode. if you turn the dial on my own. But it's pretty crazy when you see that. I'm just glad that they didn't have to die, unfortunately. Like you know, like Tupac and Biggie did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For us to really like appreciate the genius. Unfortunately, that's kind of. You know, everything kind of gets opened yeah. up and dissected years later and stuff like that. And this thing has just managed to stand the test of time. And I couldn't imagine the amount of, you know, festivals and people that have thrown money at these guys to try to get them just to do one fucking show. I mean, right. Riot Fest and Punk Rock Bowling and all of these, you know, fantastic festivals that, I mean, they got the Misfits back together.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like the Misfits who have been steeped in court battles and public fucking drama for like the past 30 years over like the use of their logo and who's getting paid for it and blah 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 blah, and they haven't made a good record since Walk Among Us anyway, so it doesn't really fucking matter. But you know, when they come back and they're and they got them to do 30 like, you know, 20 Eyes in my fucking head live, like I had to miss that show. My little sister went down to Seattle to see it, but like how goddamn cool is that, that like yeah. it can be done. But I think like it just kind of speaks to the ethos that when Jesse Michaels and Tim Armstrong have both mentioned like, hey, we did that. We're very proud of this record, but you know, they're not interested in a payday 20 years later just to go and sing those songs. I hope that that's wrong. I hope that after COVID, everything fucking opens up and Operation Ivy like headlines Riot Fest or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. There is something to be said.
I think it's wishful thinking.
About people who sort of, you know, whether it be a band or some, you know, project or a TV show or something mm-hmm. like that, when you just, you know, do one thing for a small amount of time, and then when you close the door on it, then you just don't go back to it.
I think that's important. Like, yeah. There's so many things.
Think going back and
yeah.
sort of ruining something that should just stay as it was.
I mean, you can only strike lightning in a bottle. Like, if, you know, you're only going to get that a few times, like Rush Hour. Rush Hour 2 Rush Hour 3. No decline. You know what quality. I mean? In quality. Yeah. No, across the board, right? Yeah. But I would be really curious to see if, like, you know, what the world would be like without Rancid and with Operation Ivy, as, like, that was the, you know, kind of the driving force. And, mm-hmm. and if Hellcat Records would have so many people on their roster with stupid haircuts. But that's not, I don't know. It's not a stupid haircut. It's not, I think it's a fucking rad haircut. I just don't think I could do it. It's straightforward and up. If you, yeah, they give it to you when you buy a stand-up bass.
Yeah.
There's a barber at the the stand-up bass shop.
The haircut we're talking about, it angles forward as though there is a gust of wind coming from behind you at all times.
When everybody's just
yeah,
playing on the bass and like, yeah, like you're... I picture a hurricane. I got boys. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm not hating on him. I like.
No, no.
And if anybody was wondering, Tiger Army always was, always has, and always will be a psychobilly band. That's a little off topic, but if any of you guys want to go and watch the Hellcat Records DVD that came out in, I think, 2004, 2005, it's with the Indestructible album, I think, with Rancid. And yeah, we were going to film this episode last night, didn't get into it, had a few technical difficulties. And then we just got drunk and watched punk rock videos instead. And did that give you a little bit of context or like a little bit of you know, like a peek behind the curtain at what the hell I've been into for?
Yeah, from what I remember of it.
Yeah, we did get a little bit loose. Yeah. We did get a little bit loose. Well, actually, another thing that I was thinking about this band, Operation Ivy is like they took the name after a government weapons testing lab program, like nuclear mm-hmm. testing from the, you know, from the 1950s, I believe 1952. Now, do you think that this is going to go so goddamn off topic?
Please.
But I'm not a musician. I mean, we're going to get into it. Anybody? Check this fucking record out.
Yeah.
But as we dive a little bit deeper into like a nuclear weapons testing thing, I've been uh-huh. fascinated on the UFO documents and stuff like that they're supposed to be releasing.
Yes.
Coming out. I don't think it's going to be anything like mind-boggling or anything like that.
No, I don't think so either.
But in, do you know anything about the story of right around 1950s and stuff when the nuclear bombs were being tested,
mm-hmm.
Or even earlier that into the 40s, basically. That's when alien and UFO sightings like mm-hmm. shot through the roof and like a lot of actual, what I would consider to be kind of credible stories, you mm-hmm. know, have come out. Definitely very interesting. Do you think that if we were going to get some kind of like contact with the other side, do you think yes. it's going to be little green men coming off a ship or the idea of interdimensional beings has been opened up to my head and I'm fascinated by it and I don't understand?
I mean, I think, I don't know. I always thought, I mean, to be clear, aliens are real.
Well,
but
fucking duh.
I always felt like the cartoony, like the depiction that we usually see is probably just, you know, made up just because it looks like, you know, these little creatures with big heads. But
Marvin
I think also
cool
those representations are somewhat based in evidence. So I don't know. But I also feel like have you, what is that movie with Arrival? Have you seen Arrival?
Is that when they're trying to communicate through
the
thing? Yeah,
and they're
cool
all
movie.
Like cephalopods.
Yeah. Oh.
It could be something like, but also not all aliens are the same. They're coming from tons of different planets. So maybe there's some little green men.
Unimaginable amount of variety of, you know, living organisms. Or
yeah. But also, I think that some could be living amongst us already. There could be, like, very human-looking ones. Or maybe they can shapeshift.
Now we're getting into it. See, I've been kind of looking into this theory of, like, of interdimensional beings in the sense that we experience everything in, like, three dimensions or something like that,
mm-hmm.
according to this thing that, like, I'm totally speaking off topic and I know nothing about.
Yeah.
But apparently there's, like if you, like, enter into, like, a, you know, like, a fourth or fifth dimension, then you basically don't operate on the same plane as like we do and stuff like that, where we're kind of stuck to like time in a linear sense.
Gotcha.
Right? So if and is that time travel? Or am I speaking like way out of my league? Like basically what I've been doing for the past 3 days is just getting high, listening to Operation Ivy and doing my regular research.
Yeah.
you know, that I've been, you know, so diligent about for the past years. But it's something that that I had to interrupt this episode to bring up because,
well, I think it's very relevant.
Is it? Oh, okay. Because if you're going to look at me and tell me that Tim Armstrong is not from another fucking another planet, you got another thing coming. Yeah. I mean, Timmy the Turtle.
And certainly, like, artists are in touch with maybe not so much another dimension, but another level of consciousness that not everyone can operate on that plane either.
I think that the man is so incredibly prolific that that would not surprise me at all. And if all he did was to come down here just to provide, you know what I mean, us with a good rollicking time just to try to get through, yeah, you know, this
to play some ska.
Yeah,
music.
Yeah, this painful life, right? Yeah. Like, what if, like, if it turns out that that is the existence of alien life on
Earth,
then that's why you write a fucking song like Sound System. That's why mm-hmm. Rancid has songs like Radio. Last night mm-hmm. I almost cried. I was passionately telling you that I just like songs about liking songs. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was a revelation that I came to that I never really thought about, but. It's something that I think is incredibly important, you know what yeah. I mean, in today and stuff. And so when, you know, on an album like this where you're going to take the time to, you know, there's songs about basically everything, like, you know, with knowledge, like, all I know that I don't know, all I know is that I don't know nothing.
Yeah.
That's where, like, Deceptively Simple comes in, you know what I mean? To have, like, the wherewithal at mm-hmm. 20 years old, especially in this yeah. kind of genre where it's aggressive, it's fast-paced, it's fuck you, I know better, you know, like, you know, cops don't know shit, my parents don't know shit, angry kids, you know, the youth of today, right? Mm-hmm. Runaways and whatever, find each other, make a couple songs in a garage. Like, I wonder if this was, you know, if the idea for when they're making these things is to do anything more than to just play shows with their friends.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah,
you know what probably, I mean, like, yeah. I mean, definitely to record an album and release it and get to tour and all of that stuff, right? Yeah. But, like, do you think, like, I mean, the impact of that is going to be, you know, what it's going to be? I think that the reason that it is because it's so goddamn true. Like, so truthful and so, like, self-aware.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a skill to being able to describe a universal feeling very simply. And you hear it and it sounds really, yeah. You know, you hear it and you're like, well, yeah, but
totally.
It's difficult to actually put it into words. And that's what makes it resonate so much when you hear something, you know, as simple as all I know is that I don't know nothing.
Totally. It's one of those things that, like, I grew up in the woods. So when I would come down here to visit my dad to, down here would be Vancouver for any context. When I would come down here, you know, I'm going to a show kind of like with my dad, right? So, like, mm-hmm. I'm not there with my friends. Like, you can look around and all these kids with mohawks, they're getting drunk and they've been looking, you know, forward to this for just as long as I have, but they've been, you know, they're kind of coming at it from, you know, another direction, right? I'm still just a kid. I go into that same pit, not know anybody there, and I'm covered in the same beer and piss and sweat and whatever. Mm. By the time that you're, you know, when you're leaving there and shit, and I got my arms around these people, and they're, you know, you make friends at those shows. Some of them are still, you know, friends to this very day.
Yeah.
The frame is a little bit, you know, out of whack here, but I took that love for, you know what I mean, Operation Ivy, Rancid as a band, like, you know, Tim Armstrong and everything that he's done, you know, Out Come the Wolves is a Rancid album, one of the best of all time.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 1990, it's one of their, you know, quintessential albums, I think, right? Life Won't Wait for my money, but let's keep the party moving. At the 25th anniversary of that show, they played it in Vegas at Punk Rock Bowling, right? So I go down there with my friends and I meet you know, a group of kids from San Francisco that they're in their own band and stuff like that. They brought me down to the Bay Area and I've had the chance to, you know what I mean, spend time in here and kind of, like, you know, like a pilgrimage to Mecca, if you will, for the retarded little, you know, drunk kid that loves punk rock music or whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? An incredibly important experience for me, right? Yeah. So, like, you know, and then even, you know, get in the van and kind of tour around with them and get to see them play and meet all the people that, you know, they've introduced me, you know what I mean, in the towns that, you know, I've been lucky enough to go with them. It just is that there's something about this style of music and this community that mm-hmm. I've never had to pay for, like, a hotel in a lot of different places that I've been, because just based off the fact that, you know, you're a good person, you're with these people, like, we're all, you know, kind of in this together. So let's sleep on the floor and have a place to party. And, you know, that's unity, baby.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's what people love about music so much in general, mm-hmm. or just, like, any form of writing. It's all just about, you know, truth telling and, you know, that's really powerful and resonates with a lot of people. And that's why people will fill stadiums to watch bands. And even though you're with you know, thousands of other people, it still feels like a very intimate experience because you're all, you know, relating to this one thing. And I think that's what, that's why I like writing so much. And it's the same with stand up. And that's why, you know, when you hear music or comedians or whatever that are shitty, it's because they're not really saying anything.
Yeah.
They're just making noise.
Totally.
And you can tell the difference between someone who actually loves to do it and like needs to do it because they need to get this off their chest or whatever versus someone who's just doing it because they want to be a musician.
Yeah.
They want to be a comedian.
Yeah. You can really tell that like when it comes from the truest form, that person that's doing it is going to do it regardless.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And it's like, I think they're really similar actually, music and comedy. And it's just two different ways of sort of getting at the same result. Mm-hmm. Whereas where you're a musician, you're making something that people, can dance to or whatever and sing along. Whereas when you're a comedian, you say something that everyone has thought about before. And then the way that you say it, it's like almost, it's so ridiculous to acknowledge this that it's funny because it's like almost uncomfortable.
Well, it's weird. There's something like visceral about it. Like I love dark humor because like there's something very dark. And you know, when you turn that corner, everybody can kind of sit in that same place together and you know, we can all breathe that collective sigh of relief, like we're all just as fucked up, you know, or whatever.
Yeah,
that, you know,
exactly.
You find that funny. But on the other side of that coin, you can do like what Seinfeld does and talk about, like, you know what I mean? He'll have a bit of, you know, the gunk around the top of the toothpaste that is so perfect and so there. It's the same thing, right?
The
it's
whole
the exact
time you're like,
same
that's
thing.
That's so true. That's so true.
Totally.
Like,
and I think when it's done well, or the stuff that I definitely gravitate towards is that, the straightforward and simple approach, right?
Yeah.
Like I own a guitar, but I'm never gonna learn a Rush song or probably be able to play one. I'm just doing too much other shit with my day, right? You know, with something, you know, with something like this, like this was the reason I can gravitate towards that or whatever. Like play those three chords, play that little thing, have fun. You know, you can kind of smash around a little bit and get on with your day.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like that deceptively simple, like Stephen Wright or like Anthony Jeselnik, Mitch Hedberg, or something like that. Like those jokes are, you know, like if you pull a word out of there, it doesn't work anymore. You know what I mean? It's completely simple and it's, well, deceptively simple, but like perfect as it is.
Yeah.
Operation Ivy song, 90 seconds. You know what I mean? Coming in and out. And you have, you know, so much that, you know, so much that you're basically going to do. Okay, we're going to take down, you know, the government here. You know, we're going to talk about police. We're still going to have a cool groove that people are going to dance to. And we're going to get out of here in 90 fucking seconds. Watch us work. You know what I mean? That's incredible. But just coming from, you know, like the realest place, right? Because if you go to this area, and I mean, I was there in, fuck, you know, 2010s, you know what I mean? I've done there 5 or 6 times over the course of a few years. This is in 1986, 1987, right? When you know, they're singing songs about junkies running dry and all that stuff, like down there, like that, that area is fucking wild today. You know what I mean? And so, I mean, imagining what it was like, you know, then for them to, you know, to come with that, you know, with an attitude. This record is so goddamn raw and so goddamn positive at the same time. Like, I can't walk away from it without, you know, without smiling, you know, and saying like, you know, fuck everybody and fuck everything except for, you know, but like us over here, you know, you feel like you're on the team or something like that.
Yeah.
If you can like look past that thing where, is there any like equal like forms of rebellion or anything like that that you've, I think, is that the, like a big difference between us, I think, with with like our personalities, maybe even the upbringing or anything like that? Is there any time where you're just like, fuck this, like I need something, you know, some art or whatever that like to help me, you know, push through that and kick a fucking door down or do something that, you know, that you have to? Have you ever had that tension bubbling in any art to, you know, to kind of guide you through it?
I mean, yes. I don't know. I don't know if it's if the instinct was ever to rebel so much for me. But yeah, I mean, like I always loved music as a kid. I'd always turn to that. But I don't know. I think I think mostly from a very young age when I would ever start feeling like overwhelmed or anything like that, I would just turn to to substances.
Well, yeah. Ideally.
And that was usually, that was like my form of, of rebelling, really.
Fair enough. So like, is it kind of like a get high and cut off kind of thing? Like shut up the world or whatever? Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why you like that. That's why you like acid rock and all the and all the grooves like that. For anybody watching next week, Jackie's gonna show me Electric Ladyland.
Yeah, with Jimi Hendrix. So that's Electric Ladyland.
That's gonna be cool. A lot of the rock and roll that I like is very fucking straightforward and very fast. So it's gonna be fun to get me to listen to like 40 guitar licks and solos and shit. And we're gonna sit through. I'm loving it. I'm really looking forward to it. And we're back, everybody. Welcome to the first episode of Show Me Yours. Part C. Yeah, we're going to get there. We're going to put it all together. We just have to make sure that we're ironing out all the odds and ends. My computer is back up and running, and I don't know. We'll resort to it if we need it. Mm-hmm. But Jackie, I think that something about this record that is so perfect is like of a time capsule that makes it kind of interesting to me is that this whole record basically screams about, you know what I mean, kind of like fuck the mainstream culture while like, you know, pounding forward like social justice. You know what I mean? This is a record that the kids today, you know, we would definitely, you know, completely fall in line with. Right. Mm-hmm. What do you think is do you think it's like the style or is there an opportunity for something like this to like to resurface and maybe give some annoying kids something better to listen to?
Well, I feel like there is. There's still tons of, you know, things like this out there that kids turn to.
Oh, absolutely.
They're still churning out.
They're still turning in. Yeah, they're still selling Operation Ivy back patches and shit. You're still going to see a 15-year-old kid who's going to sew this on with dental floss and, you know what I mean? And I hope that, you know, they go down the, you know, down the road of punk rock.
Right.
But yeah, it's interesting to see that, you know, the culture today is looking around like, you know, everything is an issue. We got to, and absolutely, mm-hmm. right? We have to, you know, change some shit around, right? And make life a lot easier for some people that are, you know, that don't have it as easy as the rest of us. But it's interesting in the sense, like, when kids are bringing it up now, because they're kind of at the forefront, right? They're the ones getting shot in schools and shit. Like, they should definitely be the ones talking about it. And the reaction from their parents is, or like, you know what I mean, the adults is almost ridiculous, right? They're like, you kids don't know what you're talking about, right? And then they're screaming, like, why the fuck is anybody talking about this? Completely unaware, almost, that, like, people have been yelling for change.
Right.
For years, and far before Operation Ivy, too, you know what I mean? Right? Like, the problems of the past just kind of, like, you just know, mimic themselves in different,
And I do think every generation probably has a tendency to think that they're the first ones saying something or talking about something, or they're the first ones who have felt this way when really, you know, history just repeats itself over and over and over again.
That's a lesson to all the listeners. Talk to other people. You're not that special. Yeah. And, you know, there's a good chance
anything
that what you're going
thought,
through.
Someone's probably thought it before.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. Relax. Special. Yeah. You're not brilliant. We're brilliant. Corey and Trevor are brilliant. Yeah. You know what I mean? But
us excluded, obviously.
Clearly. Because, duh. Yeah. That's why we're shining a light in my bedroom, in my apartment. And rocking this up. But yeah, I think that I'm very much like kind of guilty of that. It took me a long time to, you know, to learn that. It's really easy to, you know, to come full circle, you know, once you've been enlightened and talk about how everybody else is dumb. But I'm from the woods, you know what I mean? And I would spend a lot of time grounded with, you know, my mom was a strict disciplinarian, and I was a wild, wild young boy, you know, getting arrested and getting in trouble with the law and whatnot. So the only thing that she didn't do was take away my CDs, right? So I would sit in my room, and I couldn't talk on the phone. I couldn't go out anywhere and whatever, right? It was just really, you know, low form of lockdown. Thank God I'm from Canada and not America, or else I would have actually probably been incarcerated. And then I wouldn't have any fucking CDs. that's just another reason why we're happy to be where we're from. But, you know what I mean? These are, it's funny because the music that, you know, that you listen to, especially in like young formative years, kind of really like inspires, I think, like your personality, you know, through the rest of the days. And I'm just fucking happy that I found, you know, I fell into like a pool of of a genre that I could at least, like, you know, be proud to look back on. Because there's some shit that I was definitely listening to that, you know, we're not going to look at those pictures. We're not going to bring that up.
Yeah.
You'll see on the Instagram page, I'll post a lot of silly stuff that I've collected over the years as far as music's concerned. But mm-hmm. But yeah, this is that one that I can kind of, like, hang my hat on and go, like, well, you know what I mean? For a kid that made a lot of bad decisions, this one was probably, you know, decent.
Yeah. It's funny. Yeah, I've thought about this a lot, just, like, thinking about things that I was, like, into as a teenager and stuff. I don't even really think I had a personality.
Interesting. Yeah. Did you take anything, like, from your teenage years, like, to now? Because I have to shed a lot of my stuff. Like, I have to remember, like, you're fucking 30 now, man. So yeah. Some of this stuff, I mean, I'm still, like, into skateboarding and punk rock as much as I was, you know what I mean, as a kid. Yeah. Or, like, even, like, hip-hop a lot, too. Like, you know what I mean? Still thinking of funny things to rhyme, but, like, that all started in that thing, and I'm, like, taking that to my adult life. Like, do you have anything like that?
Well, I mean, yeah, there was a lot of music that I was listening to that I still do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of my dad's music and stuff like that. But for the most part, I don't even know. I think it's because I just didn't have any time. I was always, like, a really busy kid. Ever since I was like 5, I always had stuff going on after school.
Oh shit.
And then when I went to high school, it was a private boarding school. So I was there like 12 hours a day at least. And so I really didn't have a lot of my own free time. And so it wasn't until
like on the woods on the island too. Like, I think geographically speaking, isolated. Like, you couldn't, like, yeah, like, we're like the city latchkey kids that would just kind of run around and get into trouble. But like, that's because the trouble was there, right?
Yeah. And I think in high school, I think because it was such like an insulated community, your interests were just like what everyone else in the school was interested in. Like, it was a bubble.
Yeah. But there wasn't, like, different cliques of, like, you know, that's, like, the jocks and the skaters and the punk or whatever. Like, it was my high school is a fucking cliche, like, 90s or early 2000s high school, or Not Another Teen Movie kind of thing like that.
Yeah, no, there were not.
Maybe that's just the way I remember it.
There were, like, I mean, I wouldn't say there were a lot of cliques. There were, like, the Asians.
Jesus.
And everyone else.
My God. I'm from the woods. Like, I'm from the interior. There was not. I think there was.
Well, because.
Shout out to, like, the one or two Asian students that were. I mean, we didn't give them a hard time or anything.
Well, yeah. No,
Jesus, Jackie. What are you saying here?
I'm just saying there were a lot of
Asian. Stop Asian hate. We believe that on John's Show Me Yours podcast.
Yeah, we can cut that. We can cut this.
No, it's staying in. No. Careful.
Now is not the time.
No, but it's interesting to know, right?
I just mean, like, in terms of people that hung out with individual groups, because there were a lot of Asians at our school because it was popular overseas,
mm-hmm.
and so they would speak like their own language to each
Absolutely.
Other.
Yeah.
We
you fucking dug yourself out of that hole, Jax. Yeah. Nice work. Fuck yeah! Totally thought I was gonna be the first one going down on this.
But yeah, there were, it wasn't, you know, it was not a typical high school at all. And so I don't think I really started developing, like, my own personality and figuring out what I really liked until I went to university. And those were really, like, for me, more formative years than like in high school at all.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, the boarding school, like, it's kind of, like, seems insulated. Like, where's the room for you to find your own thing?
Like, not only encouraged, but everyone is forced to sort of do the same thing, wear the same thing.
Fuck, you need Operation Ivy in your life.
Yeah. There are a lot of rules to follow. That I guess that was when I was in high school. I did have a lot of moments where I would rebel against the rules because I felt like, since I wasn't a boarding student, and since I didn't live there, I felt like a lot of the rules shouldn't apply to me. But
wait, what is a board? So, like, I understand what it is, but are people coming from, like, the Asian population in your school? Were their parents living in Asia and sending their kids there just to do the school?
Yeah,
and that's what. Oh shit.
Yeah.
So the majority of the students there stay there all the time.
Yeah.
Oh fuck.
Yeah.
Sounds like a fucking prison.
Yeah, well, that's how I felt.
Wild.
I really didn't like it there.
And you lived down the fucking road?
Yeah, I lived about 20 minutes away.
Well, we drove, okay, yeah, oh, that, oh, you, that's yeah. the, beautiful facility. Yeah. It doesn't look like my high school is what I was here.
But yeah, I think I think that's kind of why when I look back on myself as a teenager, I just like didn't really, I don't know, I just didn't really have a lot of I didn't have a lot of time, and I just didn't have a lot of that I can think of like defining characteristics. And I even remember like
interesting all you know is that you don't know nothing, right?
Yeah. I was such like an awkward kid, and I'm an awkward adult now.
Built for comedy.
But I'd be so insecure, and I remember I would be talking, if anyone like asked me, I have this one specific memory of this girl, who I didn't know that well. And there was one time we were walking back from lunch together or something like that. And it was the first time we had like ever really spoken.
Okay.
And she was like, oh, so like, you know, what's, tell me about yourself. And I was like, I don't know.
That's it?
And I was like, I'm not that interesting. And she was like, okay. Oh, no.
That's wild.
Yeah.
If ever given the opportunity, because I was definitely an outgoing little youngster. I always wanted to tell people about me. I'd make shit up. I would tell you all kinds of crazy shit. Anything you wanted to know that would keep you around. Oh, that's crazy. That's incredibly self-aware. It's crazy to think that, you know, like looking back, like where do you think was the, was the thing? Was there, you know what I mean? You went to university in Montreal, so was there like a poutine ecstasy kind of, you know, away from home moment or?
Well, I remember getting to university and being really nervous because I was moving, like I'd never lived off the island, mm-hmm. and I was moving across the country to like a big city.
Yeah.
And I remember like the first week of classes, going to class and then going back to my dorm and being like, what do I do? This is my time. I can do whatever I want with this. Oh my God. Holy
Jesus Christ.
And so for me, university felt a lot, easier in a lot of ways than high school because I had so much free time that I'd never had before in my life. And
so you started smoking weed.
Well, that long before.
Oh, no shit. Okay.
Yeah. But and so I, you know, started partying a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We started doing a lot of drugs.
You're getting a little cold.
And I think you know, it was the first time ever really just being fully independent. And just being able to do whatever I wanted.
Hell yeah, and you're in fucking Montreal too. Yeah. I imagine like that's like it's from the woods from where.
Yeah.
Yeah, from where, like, I mean, a cool little island.
Yeah.
Island town or whatever. Now you're in the city and.
Yeah. I remember doing like doing, oh my God, when we first started doing MDMA and just when you're in that like state, you're so excited and like holy shit, and then you just start saying like whatever's on your mind, and you know, it's like holy shit, like you can just say this stuff, like oh my God, I can just tell someone like, oh yeah, I like you a lot, like
I like you a lot,
you're great.
Fucking grinding my teeth, like I really fucking love you, man. Something about you. MDMA was ever something that came around. Like, we had pressed pill ecstasy, like, when I was, like, started doing the drugs or whatever. Like, now, I mean, obviously, like, MDMA is around.
Yeah.
But, yeah, when I started doing it was always, like, a toss-up of, like, whatever color that you had. You didn't know, like, what else was in there.
Yeah. Well, we had ecstasy, too, but MDMA was huge in Montreal in those years. I don't know if it still is, but everyone was doing MDMA.
Is that a thing that you age out of? Like, I don't know. Like, there's like a 40-year-old MDMA head that's just like chilling.
An M head just out there
giving fucking hugs at the train station or something. Like, get the fuck away from me.
M head.
Yeah, right? I think you can sweat and like suck a soother until you're like 30 years old and then you're done.
Yeah, and I also think after a point, well, what happened for me, because I was doing it so much from ages probably 19 to 21, I was doing it so much,
mm-hmm.
that eventually I just stopped really feeling the effects of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know if I should speak out of turn here, but
my brother would take fucking 8 or 9 at a time or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like, exactly. Wild, we started doing wild, so much. We'd yeah. like have them have the pills and then we'd like do a line yeah, to, like yeah. just to like
just to keep it going. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely. Crush pill up and parachute them and shit like that. I mean, that was
yeah, exactly. Yeah. yeah. yeah, yeah. And I remember, yeah, the last time I did it was in Montreal before I, it was like a couple weeks before I moved back to the island and my friend was visiting me and we did MDMA. We did so much and I just like didn't really feel it. I mean, looking back, I was definitely on MDMA.
I have the same thing. I told you, we bought a bottle of rum a couple weeks ago, and I was like, I don't know. I could drink a whole bottle of Bacardi and not even get drunk. And that became the joke for the rest of the evening, because I couldn't fucking stand.
Yeah.
I was walking around there, but I just remember drinking a bottle of lemon Bacardi and fucking not. I was good.
I remember we like came back to my place to do more MDMA, and we did it, and my friend was like wanting to go back out.
Yeah.
And I was like, let's just stay here. I like, crawled into bed.
Cuddle puddle?
Yeah. Fuck, no, yeah. Literally oh. just like sitting in bed. I mean, just like being like, I'm done. I don't want to go out and party more. I just want to do a bunch of MDMA and get in bed and do bong tokes.
Oh, that's when you know that you're going there is, yeah, when the party drug is like, I don't want to fucking go to the party. Like, I'm just doing drugs.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, at that point. That's when you gotta do it.
Yeah, and I had, like, strategically got us back to the apartment because I wanted to like just get back in bed and I was like, yeah, we'll just do more and then we'll go back out.
You
so
jerk.
When we did more and I was like, why don't we just like,
you know what,
not?
Guys, maybe, yeah. I'd be fucking choked if I would know too. I'd be like, you've been fucking bringing us back here for the past hour. You knew you were gonna do this. This is bullshit. I've never been that well, you know my personality. I always want to stay out, or like I always want to, you know, mm-hmm. stay up or stay out. Like MDMA was like, it was always fun, but like I also liked like hallucinogens and stuff like that. Like we were yeah. definitely tripping. But it's interesting to like, so if you're out there, you know, like that's that. So when you're saying that you didn't have like any defining qualities or your own personality when you were a kid, you kind of still got to build your own. I was just thinking mm-hmm. about that while you were saying that. It's like, if this is, you know, something that like I like hang my hat on that hook or something, right? Like, so I've had like a lot of, you know what I mean? A lot of personality or a lot of things or whatever that fucking weren't mine. Mm-hmm. You know what yeah. I mean? Like I was growing up in a small town. There wasn't a lot of punk rock kids. And when I would come back here, you know, to visit my dad on the, you know, summer or for Christmas or whatever, I would just come back and be like, fuck, man, like, there's this thing happening out there. It's, mm-hmm. you know, weirdos and stuff, just like I'm trying to tell my friends. And I was, you know, lucky enough to bring a few over to the dark side. And, you know, shout out to Matt McNeil and Robbie Elston. I love those guys. But, you know what I mean? They're, you know, when I hung out with Matt a couple of years ago, the last time that I saw him at his wedding, we talked about this record for a fucking half an hour. Just because, you know what I mean, it's something that's like that we're so steeped in or whatever, right? So I don't know, maybe it was like it wasn't mine or something like that, but I think that like, yeah, it's important for, you know, yeah. for young kids to find like a hook at least to latch onto until you yeah. find your own thing.
And I think that is,
but you
normal,
still found
though.
Your own thing regardless, right?
So yeah, but I think also how you find your own personalities that you like try out different ones.
Oh,
I think
I wore
everyone
many hats.
Does that.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's probably a better way to say what I was like in high school, is that I just didn't really like, obviously who I like am has always been there, but I didn't yeah. really know who I was at the time. Obviously no one does mm-hmm. when they're a teenager. And so
I
yeah,
told
I
you that I fucking
do.
Did. Told you that Knowledge was my favorite song, and I told you I knew every fucking yeah. thing, not actually paying attention. I'm telling you guys, you got to check this record out. It's fucking really good.
But yeah, yeah, I would just try, you know, take on other people's personalities mm-hmm. around me. I would decide I would just like what they liked and
oh,
stuff
totally.
Like that. Yeah.
I mimicked Martin. Did I ever tell you this story? I was doing like a little bit of work for this guy that he like owned all the like the apartment complexes and stuff that like my mom was living in, Slumlord or whatever in town. So me and my friends would, you know, we'd do little odd jobs for him and whatnot for cash. At one point, we're moving this like massive piece of furniture out of this building, and it was me and two of my friends, and this guy named Martin. And Martin was like, you know, just like this English guy that was just there to help out. And we're lifting this thing. It's like, it's heavy, and we're trying to get it through this door. And Martin has to like adjust. So we're like, you know, get on this side. And he's like, Roy. And then I was just, as we're lifting this thing, I was just like, Roy. Immediately after he said it, I said it. And I was like, oh shit. Like, that was not cool. And we got out of there. And my friend Cash was like, fuck, man, did you just mock Martin? Like, he waited until we put the thing down. And I kind of like walked away a little bit. And he's like, that's fucking not cool, man. And I was like, I know. Like, I was so embarrassed. And I think Martin's like, fuck you, dude. Like, and I get it, but. There's something about, yeah, there's, I don't know.
There's a mirroring you.
Yeah, exactly. It's a compliment, right? Yeah. I fucking think English people are cool as hell. At least I did. Yeah. So I did till I met Martin.
Fucking dick.
Boy. On that note, fuck you, Martin.
Fucking cheerio.
Oh, my God. Well, I think that we're just about there. Do you have any final thoughts on the album? We're just about approaching the 50-minute mark here. Gonna land the plane.
Yeah. Final thoughts is I'm glad that I was introduced to this.
Johnny did good.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. It was fun. It was a good album. Like, mm-hmm. I liked it, you know, from the start.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like listening to new things. Well, expanding the old mind nut.
Well, I'm glad that you're open to a little. But for the concept of this show, if we're gonna be showing each other records and stuff, I don't listen to like a lot of like, you know, easy listening kind of stuff or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this is the first one. We're gonna get a lot deeper down this fucking rabbit hole. It's gonna go
deep.
It's gonna go. Oh, I mean, I'm gonna try. I don't know. I'll hit the bottom sometime. I'm sure. I feel like I've hit rock bottom, but now I'm like, no, I can keep going.
It gets deeper.
Absolutely. So, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, like and subscribe and follow and all that bullshit. And
yeah, Show Me Yours podcast on Instagram. And presumably that's what it'll be on YouTube when we make a YouTube channel.
Yeah, we'll get around to it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jax, let's get the fuck out of here.